As an award-winning 60 Minutes correspondent and former anchor of the CBS Evening News, Scott Pelley has been witness to events that changed our world. In his new book, Truth Worth Telling, A Reporter's Search for Meaning in the Stories of Our Times, Scott introduces us to the unforgettable people who discovered the meaning of their lives in historic events of our times. He also offers a resounding defense of free speech and a free press as the rights that guarantee all others. And to talk about it all, Scott Pelley from CBS News joins us this morning. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Dave. Great to be with you.
Thank you. And you've been, I gotta say, you've been with 60 Minutes, the 60 Minutes family, for 20 years this year and 30 years nationally with CBS News. Quite the milestones. Congratulations.
I know. Well, I appreciate that. They haven't gotten tired of me yet at CBS, which is amazing. But thank you very much. I've just had the opportunity to have the most amazing career. I'm so grateful for the opportunities that I've had at CBS. I've been to the Arctic and the Antarctic and everywhere in between in all those years, and it's just been a wonderful adventure.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Congratulations again. You open up the conversation in the book, which I just love, by telling readers, in these pages, you will find one truth that has not changed in the first century, nor in any other. Values matter, and it is up to each of us as individuals to own that truth. That could not be any more accurate in these very interesting times that we're living in.
Well, I think so, Dave, and that's exactly why I wrote this book at this time. You know, character is destiny, and I think we have seen that again and again over these last several decades with presidents of the United States and with other people as well. And I wanted to write right now about some of the people that I have met who have shown exemplary character in the most trying times. For example, the first chapter in the book is about the firefighters that I saw with the FDNY, the fire department of the city of New York, on 9/11. I was at the World Trade Center when the buildings came down. I watched those firemen go charging up those stairwells. 343 of them lost their lives. It's the largest loss of life in any emergency service in history. And I wanted to remind the audience of that. That chapter is called Gallantry. And a lot of the chapters are named after virtues like selflessness and honor and authenticity and audacity. And I want to tell the audience about some of these heroes that I've met in these historic moments.
And as you were trying to get close, and you tell the story so eloquently about trying to get close to the towers, because you lived at that time, you were living in Washington, D.C., but working in New York that morning of 9/11, working on a completely different story. But what you were reflecting on the way to the Twin Towers, was your first experience with the World Trade Center 8 years earlier, and then that first experience that you had with the FDNY.
Well, that's right. I was sent down to the World Trade Center by the CBS News National Desk 8 years before 9/11, when terrorists drove a bomb truck down into the parking structure under one of the towers and detonated it. At the time, it was one of the worst terrorist attacks that had ever befallen America. It blew up 5 floors of the parking structure. People were killed. Hundreds of people were injured. Folks had to climb down 110 stories in smoke in order to be able to get out of the building. And so I really got to know the World Trade Center pretty well while covering that story. And one of the things that I knew from that experience was that at any given moment, there were 20,000 people in each tower.
Right.
And so as I was standing there 8 years later watching the towers collapse, I was afraid that I was witnessing the deaths of 40,000 people. It was just one of the most striking and moving experiences that any human being could ever have.
You mentioned I felt my knees hit the pavement, and standing before the collapse was the most wrenching experience of my life. I mean, I can't imagine you would feel any different.
Well, I fell to my knees and found myself praying because I thought I saw so many people dying in front of me. I asked God to take them all with no pain. And then the next thing I remember, I don't remember getting up. I just remember being in motion and running as fast as I could along with the rest of the crowd, hearing steel hitting the street behind me as I was ahead of the terrible conflagration and smoke and dust and everything that went blasting up the streets and avenues downtown. As it turned out, the loss of life there was a little under 3,000, as you'll recall, which is incredibly horrific. But there weren't as many people in the towers as I had feared, because the first attack was early in the morning. It was the first day of school in New York City. It was also a primary election day, as you'll recall. And so a lot of people hadn't gotten to work yet. And by the time the first tower was hit, a little before 9 o'clock, nobody was coming into the towers. So there weren't as many people there as I had feared, but still, as we all know, it was almost 3,000.
But the common conversation in this book is, of course, the people you met and the impact they made in their lives. These firefighters and all of our first responders were and are selfless in those they served. And there's always a key word in each of your chapters. And this one, I would have to say, is the selflessness that these people give our communities every day. And in your war coverage that you've done over the years, you write, over the next few weeks, I would learn the meaning of duty. The American people send their sons, daughters, as well as others into combat. The only independent source of information, the check on government that is advocating war, is a reporter and the photographer on the front line during what came to be known as Operation Desert Storm. I would learn about the physical risks, but more important, I would come to understand the risk to democracy when the government stands in the very right to free speech and honest reporting.
Well, you know, when America goes to war, Dave, I feel like all of America has to go. And the way that all of America goes is through independent reporting on the battlefield. The government has a stake in the war. The Pentagon has a stake in the war, and they're going to spin it in the most positive possible way. And what Americans have to have, must have, in order to be able to make decisions about their families and the life of the country, is independent, reliable information. And so it's so important that we have correspondents of all kinds on the battlefield with our troops, where they can report independently about what's going on, what's going well, what's not going as well, and all of those things that the American people have to know.
Sure.
In a democracy, it's so critical in a democracy, because the founders wanted us, the people, right, to be in charge, right, and they were counting on us to be proactive citizens.
We're talking to Scott Pelley from CBS News on his new book, Truth Worth Telling. State Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Scott Pelley from CBS News about his new book, Truth Worth Telling. I want to switch gears a little bit to a lighter note. We talked a little bit about selflessness. Let's talk about authenticity. You write, Bruce Springsteen was shocked by my question. You've got to be, I said, wild guess, worth somewhere north of $100 million. Why are you still touring? And you don't have to do this anymore. What was his response?
He was shocked that anybody would suggest retirement to him. He was in his 60s at that point, and you know, that was the reason that I called this chapter about Bruce Springsteen authenticity, because the man just cannot stop. He's not doing it for fame. He's not doing it for money. No. He's doing it because he can't do anything else. He can't do anything else but write and perform. And it's not, as he tells me in the book, it's not because he's into the rock star thing. He's really interested in who he is, who we are, who we all are as Americans in this time, and he wants to write about that. And so that was what has made Bruce Springsteen so successful. Not the reach for fame or celebrity or rock star status, but the authenticity of his writing and his quest to understand what it means to be an American.
Something you observed very clearly, that listening to his voice, it struck you that his natural cadence, his kind of unconscious manner of speaking, was like he was speaking in lyrics.
That's true. You know, I noticed as we were talking in this interview that he really spoke in chained phrases more than sentences. You know, there'd be three or four words and then three or four words and then three or four words. And they didn't rhyme, mind you, lyrics do. But he was speaking in these chained phrase kind of concepts, so that, you know, I couldn't tell whether he spoke that way because he's been writing lyrics all these years, or if he's been writing lyrics all these years because his brain worked that way. But it was very similar.
We talked about selflessness, authenticity, and now gratitude. You write, in 2011, when I became anchor and managing editor of the CBS Evening News, I adopted a new valediction for my emails and letters. Rather than thanks or yours truly, I end with grateful. The adjective captures how deeply I feel about the men and women who work too hard and risk too much to cover the news for us each day. I believe that no one is self-made. We are fashioned from the generosity of others. And those are words to live by no matter what kind of work or line of work that you're in.
Absolutely. I mean, aren't we almost all involved in some kind of team sport in the work that we do? That's certainly true in television. I get far too much credit for the work of others. I'm the most visible person on a story on 60 Minutes. But let me tell your listeners, every story I do at 60 Minutes, there are producers, associate producers, cameramen, sound men, video editors, senior producers, the executive producer of the broadcast, Bill Owens, on and on and on. There's a legion of people, graphic artists, I could go on. And that was what was so important to me at the Evening News and at 60 Minutes, was to credit everyone for the work that they were doing.
In 76, you were fascinated by a fairly new program at a young age called 60 Minutes. 60 went on the air twice a month. It was an experiment, so to speak, with Mike Wallace and Harry Reasoner, kind of a magazine for television. Did you know at that point of your life and watching these shows and the kind of reporting that was happening that this was what you wanted to do with your life?
You know, I didn't quite. I wanted to be a still photographer. When I was a boy, and I wanted to be a photographer for National Geographic. And I was working at a newspaper in West Texas, beginning at the age of 15. I had to lie about my age because they only hired kids who were 16 and
right,
above.
Right,
so
right.
My lifelong quest for the truth began with a lie. And so at the age of 15, I'm working at the newspaper as a copy boy on the 3 to midnight shift. And after about a year of that, I'm hoping to get a job in the dark room with the photographers. The executive editor of the newspaper comes in, and he's a big barrel-chested guy with a Marine Corps bearing. And he looks down at me. I'm working on my high school homework. And he said, "Do you want to be a reporter?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I never gave it any thought." He said, "Well, do you or don't you?" I said, "Well, sure, I guess." He took me out of the wire room, sat me down in front of a typewriter, which I had no idea how to operate, and I've been a reporter ever since. I was 16 years old.
Wow.
So that was the end of my photography career. But I'll also tell you that around the age of 18, I was interested in this 60 Minutes thing, and I wrote a letter, 18 years old, sitting in a Pizza Hut in Lubbock, Texas. Yeah. I wrote a letter to Don Hewitt.
Yeah. Wow.
The executive producer. And he was the creator of 60 Minutes. And it was a silly letter, like something like, "Gee, Mr. Hewitt, how do you do it?" So every day I go to the mailbox expecting my response from Don Hewitt. And one day, sure enough, there's a buff-colored envelope in the mailbox that says CBS. And I open it up, and there's a card inside that said, "Dear viewer, your letter has been received and a reply will be forthcoming."
Oh, yeah.
Well, now fast forward about 25 years, I'm in my first screening with Don at 60 Minutes. And after the screening, I said, "Don, where the hell is my letter? You never wrote me back."
Do you still have that letter, by the way, the response that you got?
I wish I could. I am a pack rat. I kept so much of my book is written based on my old notebooks, which I still have, but I don't have that darn letter.
I want to wrap up our conversation with a poignant quote from your book. You know, "United We Stand has never been the secret to America's success. We are an amalgam of all the peoples of the world. Divided we stand is our strength. With all of our diversity and our languages and cultures, we should agree on one big idea. Each of us belongs, each of us contributes, and each of us must be heard. We are all woven into the tapestry of the stars. That is a fight worth winning and a truth worth telling."
Absolutely. You know, I worry, Dave, and by the tapestry of stars, I mean the stars, the constellation on the American flag, right? If you think about the American flag, all 50 stars are there, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's not a flag that has the liberal states. There's not a flag that has the conservative states. All 50 stars are in that blue field, which is called the Union. And the flag itself is an icon of compromise. It's the only way democracy can work. It's why we invented democracies to begin with. And so I wanted to make the point in the book that, you know, we are walling ourselves off in digital citadels of confirming information. There are people who are looking for the news that tells them that what they already think is right. And what we need to be doing is coming together in the middle. Coming together in the middle so that we can work on the problems of this country, and no one's going to get everything that they want, but we need to move not left, not right, but forward.
So true.
And we can do it as a country, but we've got to listen to one another.
Well, we've only touched the surface of Scott Pelley's new book, Truth Worth Telling, and you can get it at Amazon or wherever books are sold, and you can see Scott every week on 60 Minutes, Sunday nights at 6 Central on CBS. Scott, thanks for sharing some of these stories with us tonight. I really enjoyed the book.
Dave, I appreciate that.
All right, top stories are next on 720 WGN.